The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
As I'm often compelled to do, one comment on what we just heard in the newscast. So you have private card room operators suing the state because they're not allowed to accept sports betting. Only the tribes can, which is a gigantic giveaway by our Democrats in the state legislature to the tribes, because New York State, they just legalized sports betting for the first time, and the state is going to make hundreds of millions of dollars in tax revenues because of legalized sports betting there. Here in Washington, right now, there's one tribal casino that has sports betting. They get all the revenues, no split at all with the state. In fact, we're the only state in the country that has tribal gaming where the state doesn't get a cut of it. Thank you, Chris Gregoire. So they have a monopoly on sports betting now. And to give away all of that money when they tell us they have to raise our taxes all the time, it makes absolutely no sense. So, and by the way, everybody who gambles. They just have bookies. They have illegal gambling where they can do it. But in the state of Washington, they are just forcing people to do the illegal gambling. And because of it, the state doesn't get any cut of the revenue. So, yes, I do think we should have legal, privatized, taxed sports gambling here in Washington. Okay, that's my comment on the newscast. This is a crazy day on so many levels. I'm about to prove that to you. I didn't tell you. We're coming to you from the Carter Silver Studio. Welcome. Okay, let's get right to the big lead.
The big lead. Bizarro world.
So as you know, a bunch of schools are closing because of COVID. Some that are staying open, they have special rules. Like, we've talked a lot about kids having to eat their lunch outside. If parents made their kids sit outside on 38 degree days, people would call CPS, say they're abusing their kids. When the government, schools, make children eat outside on 38 degree days, it's for the children. But let me tell you, a parent just sent this to me last night. And these are the new rules at one elementary school in Seattle. And I just want to illustrate how absolutely insane the branch COVIDians have gotten. So this is at Queen Anne Elementary School, reportedly. But they sent a note to the parents, and they said, when it is sunny, they said, we're going to continue to eat lunch outside to ensure everyone's health and safety. And then they give the guidelines for it. When it is sunny, we dine on the basketball court. We dine. Who uses the word dine for elementary school kids? I would shove down the food as fast as possible so I could run outside and play basketball for the rest of the lunch break. But no, they dine. What do? Do they set up candelabras so the children can dine outside? When it's sunny, we dine on the basketball court. When it is raining, and here's where it gets really interesting. When it is raining, we have multiple areas to eat undercover. It doesn't sound like great sentence structure from an English grammar perspective, but whatever. It's only the schools. When it is raining, we have multiple areas to eat undercover. Sounds like they're eating the multiple areas. Anyway, I'm not going to get bogged down on that. Treehouse eaves under the basketball hoops and behind the treehouse on benches. That's where the kids can eat. Three covered outdoor alcoves. One in front of the treehouse and two behind the treehouse. The covered gym entrance. Each of these areas has been marked so students can see designated eating spots with a 6-foot social distance. Okay, so the kids have to sit under a little alcove when it's raining outside. They have to be 6 feet apart. Now, they said to the parents, moving forward, if the rain is coming down sideways against the treehouse eaves, students whose parents have completed the eating in the cafeteria permission form during extreme weather. That's the name of the document. If parents have completed the, and then they have a link to it, eating in the cafeteria permission form during extreme weather document, the kids will be given the choice of continuing to eat under the eaves in the rain and making the best of it, or two, extreme weather cafeteria use. And for that one, they write, we have marked off eating spots. They put it in quotation marks to make sure we all understand the gravity of it. We have marked off eating spots in the cafeteria to use during a torrential downpour if one of the undercover areas is soaked. Eating indoors. Sorry, when I was reading this to myself, I couldn't stop laughing. I was hoping I could avoid it, reading it to you. They'll have this eating spots if there's a torrential downpour and the undercover areas are soaked. Eating indoors will be a silent, focused on eating affair, meaning that students will sit, get out their lunch, slip off mask, return mask between bites, and eat silently. When finished, students will put their masks back on and exit the cafeteria. Is this really what you want from your government schools? That they, in a torrential downpour, they mark off spots on a cafeteria floor where the kids will sit. And then the orders are just so ridiculous. A silent, and that's in quotation marks too. Eating indoors will be a silent, focused on eating affair. Focused on eating in quotation marks. Meaning that students will sit, get out their lunch, slip off mask, return mask between bites, and eat silently. When finished, students will put their masks back on and exit the cafeteria. Now, these are great elementary school student eating rules for North Korea. For Seattle, I'm not so sure. But we're teaching the kids at a very young age that they are wards of the state, that the state is their sunrise and sunset and everything in between, that the state will tell them to eat silently. Pull down your mask. Take a bite. No, you can chew with the mask up. Put the mask back on while chewing. Take it down. Swallow. Take mask down. Take another bite. Put mask back up. Chew. Swallow. Exit silently. This is a great plan for our children. I'm really glad that our kids are being taught, starting in kindergarten, how to follow the mandates of insane people. Because let's face it, we all know as adults, we have to deal with insane people all the time. Personally, if my kids were still this age, I would want to shield them from the clinically insane. But no, now the clinically insane are in charge of our children. So that's the lunchtime eating rules in a torrential downpour, but only if you, the parent, has filled out the eating in the cafeteria permission form during extreme weather form. Then your kids can eat silently. This is quite a region that we have crafted here, where government is in control, and we're teaching our kids, starting at age 4 or 5, that the government is in control of their lives. Don't ever question anything. Don't ever use common sense. In fact, there will be no more common sense. Whatever government mandates, no matter how crazy, is the way you will live your lives. You want another example of this? Up next in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. I sense a Dory rant coming on.
We are 11 days into the new year, and as of January 1st, children in our state, I'm going to stick with the children theme here, can now change their gender without their parents being part of the process at all. New laws that went into place effective on January 1st of this year says that if children go to a school nurse and the school nurse hooks them up with zealots who are insistent that children in as great a number as possible should change their gender, the children can now do that. And the health insurers, this is the new law as of January 1st, because right now, for the last couple of years, medical doctors have not been allowed to talk about 13-year-olds' medical care without the kids' permission. But now, under the new law, insurance companies must cover gender-affirming care, including surgical treatments that previously were denied insurance coverage. So this was a bill passed by Democrats in the Washington State Legislature, and they say for children between the ages of 13 and 17 years old, without parental consent, they can take very powerful physiological, biological changing hormones that will alter their bodies for the rest of their lives. And all the communication has to go through the 13-year-old child, including with the insurance company. The insurance companies cannot disclose to parents. The parents still have to pay for it. The parents just cannot be part of the knowledge or informational process. They can be denied any information of what their child is doing, according to this new state law, thanks to the Democrats in our legislature. And they say that since some children, that they cannot change their gender without some modification, meaning surgical, according to this law, the insurance companies can do things like facial reconstruction surgery to make a little boy look more like a girl or a girl look more like a boy. They can do things like laser hair removal if a little boy doesn't want to be a boy anymore. And in the past, the insurance company said, no, those are cosmetic. You know, just like some LASIK procedures aren't covered by insurance unless it's medically necessary. You know, if you have a cataract or something. But now insurance companies have to cover 13-year-olds deciding about changing their biology here in Washington. And the parents are cut out of the process altogether. Now, what's interesting about this is Democrats in our state legislature, they just a couple of years ago, they raised the smoking age in Washington from 18 to 21. And why? Well, because they said 18, 19, 20-year-olds, their brains are not sufficiently developed to have informed consent of whether they want to try a cigarette or vaping. And so the Democrats raised the smoking age from 18 to 21 because 18, 19, 20-year-olds, their brains cannot make a good decision. They, a couple of years ago, raised the age to buy a gun from 18 to 21. Why? Same reason. 18, 19, 20-year-olds in Washington state, their brains cannot make a proper decision about buying a firearm. But if you are a 13-year-old girl and you want to take powerful hormones that will start to physiologically change your body into that of a male, you can do so. Now, how do Democrats explain the insane contradiction between those two? Well, they don't. They ignore it. When they're asked about it, they refuse to give any kind of a coherent, cohesive answer. When somebody like me requests an interview, they refuse to do an interview because they know that those are unanswerable questions. They know that their zealotry has taken them into the realm of the bizarre, of the just unexplainable. And that's where we talk about the insanity of it all. So welcome to Washington State, where a 20-year-old cannot get a cigarette, but a 13-year-old can switch genders. I know, doesn't make a lot of sense. All right, and finally, in the big lead.
The big lead, big local.
We talked yesterday about that police dog that was stabbed to death by a crazy man. There was a man who was walking with a towel, bare feet, down the street, carrying a machete. And that's when the police started, they got several calls about this guy, and the police responded, Seattle police. And when they did, one of the officers started tracking this guy because they couldn't let this man attack an innocent civilian on the street with the machete. And so the officers started tracking this guy, and one of them was a canine officer with his dog, Jedi. Here's the homeowner first reporting the burglar, and this is the guy with the machete.
Don't break the fuck. Get out of here.
I've got an intruder in my house.
What's the address?
Get out of here.
South Eddie Street.
South Eddie Street. You have no idea who this person is?
No idea.
No, just a guy with a machete. He said he was going to stab them, wanted to rob them. Police responded, and they quickly spotted the guy on the street with a machete.
Stop! He's got a machete.
And that's when Jedi, the police dog, and his handler, they were close enough, and Jedi went in.
To Sam, I need more units down here now. Stop it right there! Stop it! No, no! Stop it! Stop it right now! Stop it right now!
Okay, police had to open fire. They killed the man. The man had killed the dog, Jedi, this noble canine who'd been just involved in so many great, successful outings with the Seattle police. Jedi was stabbed to death. Jedi's handler suffered a huge gash in his shoulder, and the guy with the machete was shot to death. Why did this happen? Well, it was, again, because of Democrats in our state legislature. I talked to Roger Goodman yesterday, one of the sponsors of the police reform bill a year ago, and he now says, yeah, we're going to fix it this year. But what they said was you cannot use weapons of a certain caliber. And one of the weapons that the Democrats in our legislature banned were the weapons that can fire beanbags at somebody. Now, if that law had not passed, thanks to the Democrats last year, the responding Seattle police officers would have used beanbags. They would have fired them at the guy. That would have knocked him down. And then they could have safely taken the machete away, and they could have gotten the guy the help he needed. But while the police reform bill said they should use less lethal options, at the same time, the police reform bill took away the guns that fire beanbags. So that tool is gone right now from people like the Seattle police. Because of Democrats in the legislature, a police dog is dead. A mentally ill man is dead. A police officer is stabbed. They say they're going to fix it now a year later. But if they hadn't passed it to begin with, we wouldn't have a dead, noble German shepherd and a dead, lost soul who is mentally ill. Thank you, Democrats in the Washington State Legislature. Are you proud of yourselves? Can you look yourselves in the mirror when you realize what you have done? That is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Oh, and I am just getting started here. Coming up next, a local school board wants to ban a Pulitzer Prize-winning classic of American literature, To Kill a Mockingbird. The children can't be exposed to that. I know, 13-year-olds can change their gender, but they can't read an American literature classic. We'll explain. The insanity continues here on the Dory Monson Show. The craziness in our region just continues. Last night, the Mukilteo School Board, they took some public comment because they are thinking about banning a classic of American literature from the reading list for ninth graders in the schools there. The book is To Kill a Mockingbird. I'm sure many, if not most of you, have read To Kill a Mockingbird. It's been a long time, but I remember that it had quite an impact on me because it's a story, you know, Atticus Finch, who dared take on a racially charged case and was led by morality and his ethics and not by racism. And it's Harper Lee won a Pulitzer Prize for writing the book, and it is considered a must-read, especially for high school students, has been ever since I was a kid, and that was a long time ago. But in the Mukilteo School District, somebody complained about To Kill a Mockingbird for a bunch of reasons. And here's what's being listed as to why kids should be prohibited from having access to the book. By the way, it's interesting. We can put pornography in school libraries these days. And we do. We have an awful lot of things that are just unquestionably pornographic in school libraries. But a literature classic? No. That's too much. So the reason that it has been requested that they pull the book is because To Kill a Mockingbird, quote, marginalizes and gives little voice or agency to characters of color. It celebrates white saviorhood and tells the story through white perspective only. Now, yes, Harper Lee wrote it. It was based in part and her growing up in the South back in the 30s. It was set, I believe, in the 30s. And it was told from the perspective of a white person. Yes, all of that is true. But they said it celebrates white saviorhood because the white attorney, Atticus Finch, defends a black person who had been accused of rape and gets that person exonerated. And that's now considered evil in 2022, Mukilteo, by some people, apparently. And the book, To Kill a Mockingbird, uses the N-word almost 50 times and never addresses it as derogatory. Well, no, because it is set in the 30s, and, you know, I know that by today's standards, it is abhorrent. But to have accurate dialogue that reflects that time nearly 100 years ago in the South. Sad but true, but people used the N-word back then. And they also say the book does not support the district's goals of equity. Of equity and inclusion. So I don't know how they came to that conclusion, but the complainant says that To Kill a Mockingbird does not support the district's goals of equity and inclusion. Again, that is a nonsense sentence that just uses words that are so woke, and they just plug it in as if it's some sort of absolute truth. But once you say that To Kill a Mockingbird doesn't support equity and inclusion, well, people go, what? Well, we can't have that then. So they took public comment last night at the Mukilteo School Board meeting. Before the meeting started, the school district spokesperson named Diana Bradford. She talked to King 5 News and said that reading To Kill a Mockingbird can be traumatic for some kids.
How do we walk our students through what could potentially be very hard to read, very uncomfortable to read, and frankly, in some cases, traumatic?
Traumatic. Man, I tell you, you're fairly fragile if reading a book is traumatic, when it is a classic of American literature, and when the moral message of the book is one that I think is undeniably a positive one for any era. But no, it can be traumatic. It's for the children that we're thinking about banning it because they need to accommodate everybody.
And we want to honor people's different belief systems, but that can be a tricky balance to maintain.
Now, I will say, having watched a chunk of the school board meeting last night, there are some people on the school board who have some common sense in Mukilteo. And one of the things that has been suggested is that it be removed from the required reading list for ninth graders, but teachers would still have it as an optional book that they could assign to their students. Here's a little bit of that conversation.
If a teacher really wanted to continue to teach that in their classroom, they could still do that. It would be their option because it would remain on the approved novels list.
Okay, so let's go to the school board meeting last night. A teacher said that black students could be uncomfortable with the N-word in the book.
Atmosphere, the hateful notion that black people are less. My black students tell me that when the word is quoted or spoken in class, they feel like a giant spotlight is shining on them. One of my students told me that his classmates were like bobbleheads turning to gauge his reaction.
Now, what's interesting is when I hear people on the left talk about why we have to have critical race theory taught in the schools, the most racist curriculum ever, they say that we need to show all of America's evils from the past. And that's the whole point of teaching CRT. But here's a book that in what is a very positive outcome way, it exposes that, yes, we did a lot. We used language 100 years ago that was flat out wrong. But we want to insulate the kids from that, according to those people. But the same people say, but we have to teach the kids all about America's evils in the past. Well, which is it? Do we need to insulate kids or do we need to expose kids to everything? Some say that the reason they need to ban the book is teachers just don't know how to teach.
But then at the end, teachers have, well, we need more training. We don't know how to do this. We don't know how to discuss racism. We don't know how to discuss the N-word in class, but it's still being allowed to be used by people who don't know how to use it. You are marginalizing students of color, African-American black students, if your teachers do not have the competency on how to utilize that book. And right now they said they do not have the competency.
We've got about 1 minute left.
Okay,
here's somebody who says that this is a teacher at Kamiak High School, why they want it banned.
We came to the conclusion and we argued that To Kill a Mockingbird does not promote the diverse character of our nation, which is a quote from the IMC form, and does not affirm the voices of our BIPOC students, and would not pass the scrutiny of the IMC today. And using inflammatory language like censoring or banning is a distraction. That's a strawman argument that takes attention away from the reasons why we asked the IMC to reconsider this book for the ninth grade curriculum.
So a lot of teachers and some parents, they want to censor and ban. Sorry, you don't want those words used. That's exactly what you're trying to do. You're trying to censor and ban a book. You know, you used to accuse book burning as being, you know, Christian conservatives want to burn books and ban books. No, now it's the American left that wants to do that. So what do you think? Text me. Should we ban To Kill a Mockingbird in our schools? You can text me at 888-973-CHIRO, 888-973-5476. Lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. The new Omicron continues to rage all around the region. We've had an awful lot of people who are either intentionally lying or they are just ignorant. Either way, that's not a quality I want in a Supreme Court justice. As we told you yesterday, the Biden administration is trying to get COVID mandates imposed on businesses all around the country. And that's gone to the Supreme Court now. And left-wing Justice Sonia Sotomayor, and I told you yesterday, she was a Barack Obama appointee and a guy who consulted with Obama, said that Sonia Sotomayor just wasn't smart enough to be a Supreme Court justice. So she said over the weekend just an absolute lie about children getting sick with COVID.
We have over 100,000 children, which we've never had before, in serious condition, and many on ventilators.
We have 100,000 children in serious condition, many on ventilators. Well, as we shared with you yesterday, that is an absolute lie. The actual number of kids who have gotten sick with COVID or are currently sick with COVID is about 3,500, not 100,000. And there aren't children on ventilators unless they have comorbidities, and in many cases, they have four or more comorbidities. They might be in the hospital. They're likely in the hospital, not because of COVID, but because of other medical issues, and they just happen to have COVID. But never underestimate the power of the left to defend idiocy. So the Supreme Court justice tells that blatant lie or tells and or says an idiotic mistake. I don't know which one. I'll give her the benefit of the doubt. I don't know which is the benefit of the doubt, though. Do I want to say she's a liar or an idiot or says something idiotic? I don't know. But anyway, on The View, one of their hosts, Sunny Huston, she actually defended the falsehood told by the Supreme Court justice.
Well, first, I just want to reframe this a little bit about Justice Sotomayor, because while, you know, she may not be accurate for current hospitalizations in children, she is correct.
While she may not be accurate, but she is correct. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. How is she correct?
That we have more children in the hospital now more than ever before. And it certainly reflects the current cases in children. Right now we have 82.
Okay, again, not true. We have kids in the hospital for other medical reasons, and then they test positive. They don't have any COVID symptoms. They're asymptomatic, but they're in for whether it's a broken leg or appendicitis or complications from their obesity. But they're not in because of COVID. But go on.
2,843 children are sick with COVID. More than 1,000 children have died from the virus.
Wrong. More than 1,000 have died with the virus, not from the virus. Big distinction.
In addition, about 7.8 million children have caught COVID since the pandemic started. And so those are just the numbers. And so while fewer than 83,000 kids have been hospitalized with the virus, we have kids sick with COVID more than we ever have before. And so that's a real thing, and those are real numbers.
No, they're not. It's another absolute lie. Children have about a 1 in a million chance of dying because of COVID. She says 1,000 kids have died. That means we would have 1 billion children in a country of 330 million people. Facts matter. Okay, we're going to check the news for you. And then the Fast 15 is coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show.